Hello and welcome to the Open Systems Media Webcast, titled The Evolution of Higher Speed and Density in Rugged Electronic Packaging. My name is John McHale, Group Editorial Director with Military Embedded Systems and moderator for today's event. Our speakers today are Mark C. Benton, MS, Masters of Science, PhD, and RFO Engineering Manager with an Active Products Business Development Manager with T Connectivity, Michael Walmsley, who is Global Product Management for Connectors, Aerospace, Defense and Marine at TE Connectivity, and Matthew Macalanis, Engineering Fellow, Certified LDFSS Black Belt in Aerospace, Defense and Marine at TE Connectivity. Now we have some short housekeeping announcements. This and all Open Systems Media webcasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. This webcast will consume about 40 to 45 minutes, leaving the remaining time for the question and answer session. I want to point out some important buttons on your screen now. First, please take note of the Enlarge Slides button. By clicking on this button, you'll be able to view the slides in full screen mode. You can use the Download Slide button to view the slides as a PDF to see them larger. Second important button is the Forward to a Friend button, which enables you to email a friend to register for today's event. The last button I want you to take a peek at on your console allows you to enter questions in real time, and we'll do our best to address these questions during the closing Q&A session. If you have a question intended for a specific speaker, please note so at the beginning of your question, otherwise I'll hand out the questions equally to all of our speakers. If you have a question pertaining to the webcast operation itself, one of our technicians will respond back to you during the webcast. Please note that as much as we'd like to, we may not get to all of your questions today. In that case, someone may get back to you after the webcast with more information. This webcast will be archived online and be available for 1 year. There'll also be an MP3 version of the event available. And now I will start this presentation by turning it over to Matt Macalanis. Matt?
Thanks, John, and sincere thanks to everybody that was able to take time to join us today. And today we're going to get into an exciting topic of some new products that we're introducing or maybe expanding on. And this will be in the scheme of high-speed copper and also rugged fiber optic connectivity. I think between the three of us, between Mark, myself, and Mike, we probably have close to about 100 years of experience in connecting and electronics. So we're going to move right on here. So again, Mark is on the left, I'm in the middle, and Mike is on the right. So in terms of TE, quick introduction here. So TE is definitely a world leader in connectivity. And our current slogan is we're trying to make the world safer, greener, smarter, and more connected. So these mega trends pretty much span a lot of our different business segments. And TE is a very, very diverse company in terms of connectivity. We're about a $13 billion in sales, and we have a huge range of products, hundreds of thousands of part numbers, lots of engineers. We're definitely focused with our customers. We spend a lot of our time close to our customers, even embedding some of our engineers with our customers. And we're able to find synergy across different markets and leverage what's happening depending on how technology cascades through different industries. For example, we have a large datacom division, and as the chipsets mature, we can then start to work on ruggedized solutions and put those into a different application, such as appliances and aerospace, defense, automotive, as examples. And so what we hope to deliver for our customers is an extraordinary experience with being able to have technically mature products ready for when our customers need them. We have a lot of IP, a lot of exciting new products that we have. There's over 15,000 patents that we have in our portfolio. We have a really strong investment in engineering research and development. We have lots of engineers spread globally, 7,000 to 8,000 engineers, and a lot of our sales even come from the new products that we make, and you can see some of the recognition we've had in the industry in the areas of innovation. You may be familiar with some of the brands that we have within our portfolio. Some of us, Mike and I, come from a brand called AMP. And AMP was a company started back in the 40s, and we were able to work with some exciting technology to help make airplanes faster to win World War II. And that was our solderless terminals that we made. And so over the years, NTE have acquired a lot of different brands. You can see some of those on the right. Deutsch is one of the ones we have for the Mill Circular. Hartmann and Kilovac are the relay products we have. Microdot are the smaller products, connector products that go on the I.O. Palamco is some of the back shells. Raycam Wire and Cable, that is a company that developed back in the 50s and 60s a special way to formulate materials. And we use radiated chemistry to make them rugged in terms of chemicals, scrape abrasion resistant, lightweight, and that's what's flying in a lot of aircraft today. And then we get into our marine area of Seacon and some of the things that are used in the undersea and marine oil and gas industry. But the products we make range everything from antenna products to connectivity products, fiber optics, switching products, sensing is a big part of our portfolio now. And then anything that deals with connectivity, whether it's in the wire and cable management or the actual conductors and connectors within it. So the next thing I want to talk about are some of the trends that we're seeing, especially in commercial aerospace, and then I'll talk just a little bit about what's also happening in defense. So as a passenger, I'm sure you've flown recently on an aircraft. And one of the things that commercial aerospace is trying to do is to give you a delightful experience when you're inside of the airplane as a passenger. So when you go into an airplane, you'll notice the ambiance is and mood is trying to set to give you a pleasant experience. So the lighting sometimes changes. So if you go into some of the new aircraft, you'll notice it might be blue or orange or yellow or white, depending on the mood that they want to set. So all that requires, obviously, power to the lights, controls to the systems, and they can change this either manually or automatically as the aircraft goes through its mission. Also, when you're on the aircraft, you want to be comfortable. So part of that comfort is in the seating. And the seating today, depending what class of cabin you're in, might have electronics in the seat. You might be able to have automatic controls in your seat if you're in one of the premium cabins. And obviously, if you are on a long flight, you want to be entertained or maybe even you want to go to sleep. So the comfort is very important. And sometimes there are devices in the seat that change the pressure points for you. So if you want to be entertained, they used to have TVs and things in the ceiling. Nowadays, they're either in the seat back or many airplanes today, you have bring your own device, which obviously you need power to your device. You also need to be able to have a Wi-Fi connection on that. A lot of the spacing, we're trying to be open and roomy. So that means we're trying to minimize materials to give them more room, even in the walls, trying to minimize the size of the harnesses behind the wall panels or in the ceilings. So a lot of these things are happening just to enhance your experience as a passenger. When you think about your personal space, sometimes you want to just relax, listen to music, or maybe watch a movie or watch the map as you're flying. You want to know what you're flying over as you look out the window. Sometimes you want to be connected, and many of the airlines today are providing a way for you to do shopping, either for duty-free or through special sponsors that are able to give you that internet access and maybe special view into products. You may want to play games or be able to watch many movies on your flights or connected to social media, especially today with the younger generations looking to stay in touch post their experiences. So these are all the things that we're enabling either through wireless or wired technology through IFE systems in aircraft. So that television you see on the display, that has to get power to it, has to get signal to it, some of the antenna technology has to connect to it, and the software that can show you where you are exactly, the speed you're traveling, the altitude, and so forth, the temperature. These are all things that require sensors, connectors, antennas, cables, and this is all the content that TE produces. One of the other trends within aerospace is there's a huge demand for more airplanes. And so that means we're trying to enable a very competitive landscape. There's a couple prime aircraft manufacturers in the world today, globally, and they are all trying to reduce cost. And reduced cost comes in a few different forms. Sometimes it's the cost of materials, but often it's the cost of flying. So we're trying to keep our weight low. We're trying to improve the maintenance and reliability through products that are proven, that are standardized, that we know have legacy of performance behind them. And often when building airplanes, we want to build them quicker. And some of our production rates are getting very, very fast with multiple airplanes, sometimes even per day, that they're trying to move through the factories. And many of the systems are changing from legacy systems that dealt with pneumatic and hydraulic systems. We're now getting more electrified. So some of the controls that control the actual aircraft, whether it's the flaps or landing gear or even taxiing on the runways, we're trying to find new ways to do that with lighter materials, more efficient materials, and more reliable types of systems. And last but not least is safety, and safety not just with the aircraft, but also with the workers building the aircraft. So in the aerospace industry, there is a safety record they keep track of. So making sure the materials and chemicals used and even the way the workers have to work on the aircraft, we can do that safely. So sometimes we're looking at automation to be able to do this in a better way. Last but not least, we have things in the environment. So often we think about propulsion systems and how do we make them more efficient, how do we make them greener. And so there's a lot of work being done in engines and even new hybrid propulsion and more electric aircraft with electric propulsion. So these are some of the things that we're seeing with trends. And with that comes higher power needs with megawatts required to have electric propulsion and higher voltages and higher amperages. And these are some of the things that we're seeing as trends. Cleaner, quieter, so quieter with better noise reduction with different cowling systems around the aircraft. And even some of the products we use and the chemicals we use in the plastics and materials. If you ever have a fire inside of an aircraft that has to meet flame, smoke, and toxicity requirements so we don't have dangerous fumes inside of the aircraft. And the factories, when we think about how we're helping them save energy with better carbon footprints, these are all the things that we're doing to improve the aerospace industry. We also see a lot of trends with packaging of electronics. So when you think about your cell phone and the power you have within it, many, many devices are now within one device that you carry in your pocket. So there's significant advancements in electronics, and the cost of these things are getting lower. There's a lot of monetization that is seeping into the aerospace industry with some of the radar systems and the graphic processing, the glass cockpits that we're seeing. Even window shades are now being developed that you can darken your shade electronically. So when we think about doing this, we think about standards and we think about how do we do this in modular ways and scalable ways and ways that can be adopted within an aircraft in modular ways. So standards are very important, and Mike and Mark are going to talk a little bit later about some of the standards that you will see some of these new connector products that we're working in. And many of those are used in aerospace and defense. Part of TE is to help our customers with the path to market. And so we're developing ways to use things like 3D printing and advanced manufacturing technologies to give you short-term prototypes, but also have a path toward production where we can have high volume capability, looking at different materials. Sometimes we're machining with our prototypes, but giving you options such as composite materials and structural types of packaging for the future. When we think about the defense market, there are some parallels, but one of the things that we see in defense is there's a broader range of the realm of this technology that's used. So these ranges of these domains, we call them, are everywhere from outer space, and sometimes it's deep space, sometimes it's low Earth orbit. So there's a lot of things happening with our internet and the next generation internet with low Earth orbit satellites. And then we have the launch vehicles that take things up there. In defense, we also have high altitude aircraft that operate at different speeds and altitudes and pressures than commercial aerospace. So our products have to be compatible with them. And then we have different types of aircraft that have a rotary wing or fixed wing or jets, you know, different types of vibration profiles, different types of gunfire, shocking, and vibration that we have to pass. And then we have things that are mobile on the ground or maybe autonomous, or maybe they have to work under the water or on the water. So we have many, many different types of domains that we have to work in, and our products have to be compatible and reliable in all these domains. And when we think about the technology, obviously with navigation, very, very important, especially at night or in bad weather. But a lot of data is being collected with sensors, and sometimes the sensors are being used to do surveillance or maybe just do the health of the aircraft and some of the systems, icing as an example in different climates. So there's a lot of things that we're enabling with either communication, either on secure communication or maybe pilots or as passengers. You know, these are all the things that what we're seeing, we need connectivity. So there's a lot of need for connectivity and not a lot of need for high bandwidth. A lot of data is being transmitted on a vast spectrum in the atmosphere. So when you think about electronics, we talk about different levels of packaging. So a lot of things are talking to one another, starting from a chip or maybe a sensor, and how that gets communicated through various aspects of the system. So we will step through briefly some of these types of levels, we call them. So the first one is when you have a piece of silicon, how does that connect to a board or a chip package or something? And so that's what we call level one. So it's the basic circuit element and what it's connected to. And the next one is level two, and maybe you have a chip socket that will take your silicon package and connect that to its next level. And level three are taking the circuit boards that the chips are mounted on and plugging two boards together. So this is a very, very common architecture used in backplane or parallel board stack applications. And that's going to be a lot of our talk today will be on level three and what we're doing in having two cars talk to each other in a rugged and very, very high speed copper fashion. Level four is connections between two subassemblies. So this can be inside of a box, two devices that need to talk to each other. So maybe it's a power supply that needs to talk to something else. Level five is taking another system. So this is where we're probably getting into the fiber optic aspects and either transmitting through high-speed cable or maybe high-speed copper or fiber optic. And last thing is level six is connecting between two different systems. So maybe you have a flight computer that needs to talk to some other avionic system or some type of processing system talking to another system. So in UAVs, you may have an electro-optic sensor collection device that's talking to some other type of device for autonomous mission control. So this is where we're talking through high-speed cables, either for fiber or copper. And in these cases, we typically have panel mount connectors that will connect to a cable connector. So with these levels, we're going to primarily focus on level 3 and higher for the webinar, but I wanted to give that context on some of these different types of levels. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to our product manager for high-speed level 3 product, Mike Walmsley.
Thanks, Matt. So if we look at just a quick overview of level 1 and 2, again, just from a copper and optics perspective. So copper, you could imagine a processor being directly terminated to the board. That would be a level 1 solution. In optics, it would be more a form of a coupling of a laser or a detector to an optical waveguide. You could see it could be an array, as shown on the bottom right side. It could be an array or a discrete termination. For level 2, we're looking at, for copper, that would be kind of an interface between a processor and the board. So that would basically give you the mechanical structure to attach a device to the board. In the optics realm, that would be more like an optical subassembly used in transceivers or the transceivers themselves. So some examples here are SOP Plus transceivers or midboard transceivers where they're socketized basically to attach them to the circuit board. And level 3, so Matt mentioned a lot of our work has been done in the level 3 and higher realm. If you look at copper, and I put together some examples here of industry standards, if we look at the VPX structure and VITA compliant products to support those, there's been a migration from VME, which is a legacy where we were measuring speed in megabytes, to multi-gig, which supports VPX applications, where we've got multi-gig RT3 to a VITA standard that supports 25 gig lanes. And there's next generation backplane solutions. We're looking at 56 gig for copper. So, and similarly, if you're stacking connectors, if you have an application where you have mezzanine cards, you know, legacy systems and some upgrades are using PMC as that interface. XMC provides some additional speed and ruggedization, and FMC supports FPGAs in a very high density and high pin count for many new applications. From the optics side, when we look at board-to-board terminations, you're really taking that fiber and transmitting that optical link from one board to the next. May or may not be going directly into that board. But we've been packaging optical termini into modules for VPX for some time. The VITA 66 products support that. There's been a migration toward some of the higher density solutions where we have multiple MT ferrules within a very small module to provide that interface. And then there's the trend at the bottom right. We show midboard transceivers. So you could have a transceiver on the midboard and run cabling out to the board edge. We're seeing a migration to solutions where the transceiver is actually on the edge of the card. So that frees up real estate on the board, allows more processing capability and functionality for that board. And that provides a direct termination from board to board into the mating backplane module. Just to talk a little bit about VPX, so if you're not familiar with it, it is emerging architecture, especially in the defense industry. It addresses where VME leaves off, provides solutions for much higher speed, a lot more flexibility, provides thermal solutions, smaller packaging. So we're seeing a lot of applications using VPX platform for new programs and for upgrades in the defense market. So what it does is there's a number of products as part of that from an interconnect standpoint. The top shows VITA 46, which is our multi-gig connector for the utility and the high-speed digital requirements. To the left is the optical modules, and to the right is the RF modules. So you could have optical and RF interfaces from your plug-in module to the backplane. There's also power supply connectors in VITA 62. There's mezzanine connectors, as I mentioned, the XMC connectors. There's also a space VPX standard, which has some special requirements using common building blocks for space and providing redundancy in certain configurations. But the bulk of it is there's a number of interconnect solutions. They're modular in nature, so they can be mounted on the edge of a card or on the backplane. And there are hundreds of slot profiles already established within VPX, depending if you're building a switch or a single board computer or a storage card. Those configurations will define the signaling requirements and the physical building blocks to be used for intermodularity. If you look at VPX and where it's been, this is a standard that was released actually in 2007. The VPX connector, the VITA 46 multi-gig connector, was qualified in 2006. And interestingly, in the frequently asked questions, how fast is OpenVPX, which was launched in 2010? This is when the platform opened up to the flexibility of these modules and when slot profiles were starting to be defined in the VITA 65 standard. But the question about speed was that it's currently supporting 3 1/8 gigabit per second with plans to support 6 1/4 in the near future. Well, today, those applications are going up to 10 to 25 gigabit per second. A lot of that is in the board technology, new higher speed laminates and board structures and back drilling. And then there's also advances in connector technology that make that happen. So we're seeing a very high ramp up in speeds for VPX technologies. And in the move toward higher speed copper and fiber is a key part of implementing that moving forward. So if you look at just a quick overview of the evolution of the multi-gig connector, as I mentioned, it was qualified in 2006. It's a pinless connector. It's got PCB wafers at the interface, so it's very rugged and very lightweight and configurable because these wafers can provide differential pair high-speed signaling or power or single-ended. And we do have certain configurations that are part of the standards and others that can be configurable for a certain application. In 2013, we launched RT2R, which met a whole higher level of vibration, went through some extreme testing for vibe, primarily aimed at military avionics. And we use a quad redundant contact system, so a four-point contact system with some rugged precision guide hardware to minimize the vibration and the effects of wear on the interface. And then in January this year, we launched RT2S and RT3. RT2S uses a higher speed PCB wafer. So we're taking some of that new board technology, the new materials, did some additional optimization through that whole structure within the wafers to provide a faster connector. And RT3 then add smaller compliant pins, or smaller holes in the board, which brings the impedance up and reduces some of the noise in the board termination. So we've got a really well-tuned, optimized connector for 25 gig and higher lanes. So just a quick overview. This isn't a really detailed signal integrity discussion, but I do want to point out, so when we do look at modeling and designing connectors for higher speed in the copper realm especially, we do look at the performance of the connector structure itself. So we look internally, look at what we can do to the connector structure for insertion loss, return loss. We look at the noise, and we have to look at every pair within the structure of the connector to evaluate the entire connector assembly. But it's critical to look at the channel also. So you're in actual application, you're feeding a signal from a transmit to a receive. That's probably going from maybe a switch to a payload card. It's going through a backplane. That entire link is what's critical. So you cannot look at just the performance of the connector without looking at the board termination and the full channel. So we build a model. We establish basically on common practices what board structures would be for that model. Different layers, what the traceouts are, and the board materials. And we build that model, and this is an example. So we looked at COM analysis, which is channel operating margin, a way to measure the performance for high-speed Ethernet. We took 4 inches of trace on each of the plug-in cards, 16-inch trace on the backplane, and evaluated RT3 and showed that RT3 provides that higher level of speed that we need for those 25 gig lanes in that application. So the key here is that it's not just the connector and signal integrity. We have to look at the entire channel analysis, and in the design, working with customers, we provide the signal integrity support and the modeling to enable that. So level four, there's some overlap here with level three, especially in the VPX world, because you're doing a board-to-board connection, but at the same time, you're taking a computing module, which is a subassembly, and plugging it into a backplane assembly. So another example of where increased speed and density are happening in copper is the RF world. So we're working on solutions, and I'll talk a little bit about that, to increase the contact density, get more and more RF lanes into some of these modules that require it. So it could be a tuner or a radio, or it may do radar processing where you're bringing analog signals in, maximizing the space that you have available and trying to pack more functionality into those module is critical for new programs. And in the optical space, we're seeing a move from discretes, the discrete terminals, to MTs, or multi-position arrays. So MTs can support 12, 24, or 48 fibers. So you can see you can get a lot more fiber and a lot more bandwidth into a smaller space when you go to these multi-position arrays. And on, kind of on the bottom view, you can also see a trend in some of the contact and the cabling that you're moving. There's a move from discretes to putting MTs within a circular shell. You can see there's four MTs in the one shell. So that's a lot of fiber and a lot of bandwidth within the circular connector. And on the far right is an optical flex example, too, where we can route, we can provide routed fibers into a specific array and eliminate different layers of circuitry from the system and enable more space and more efficient packaging. And just to show an example here on the RF side, so if you look at the evolution of RF modules, Vita 67 is the standard. The original Vita 67 is SMPM based. You had four and eight position modules for the half and the full modules within VPX. They're spring mounted on the plug-in card, and that way you get proper float and alignment, so you get a very robust solution that, you know, these modules will mate at the back of a chassis, in the back of a backplane, and you're slamming cards in. You absolutely have to have those RF contacts aligned and mated. And the spring allows that to happen and allows the RF interface to always be bottomed and provide excellent performance. 67.3 evolved putting the float onto the backplane side so that you could actually terminate these modules directly to a plug-in card. So instead of cabling inside of a computing module where you may have limited space, that it can eliminate the cables within there. So again, providing more options for higher density packaging. And recently, last year, we launched Nano RF, which is being put into Vita 67.3 also. So these higher density interfaces, you could see this example where you've got 12 RF contacts within a half module, where the original product with the SMPM only had four. So we're making some significant advancements in both frequency and density of RF contacts within these modules. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Mark. He's going to talk a little bit about some of the optical solutions and the higher levels of packaging.
Thanks, Mike. Before we get into any great detail on some of the fiber optic trends, I just wanted to stop a minute and define a couple of terms for those of you that may not be familiar with it. In the fiber optic connector world, there's really two styles of connections. There's a physical contact connection, where there's an expanded beam connection. And as the first describes, physical contact is literally that you bring the two fiber optic contacts, typically a ceramic ferrule with the fiber embedded in it, into physical contact under a spring load. And it's that connection properly polished and terminated that gives you the insertion loss, return loss, performance, and the like. On the expanded beam side, you have a similar approach, except the physical contacts never make contact. You insert a lens into the optical path on both sides and take the dispersing optical beam coming from the end of the fiber and collimate it. And so you make a very short, small, free space optical coupling across the fiber interface. As is true in most cases, and as you can see on the slide here, the different approaches have, you know, advantages and disadvantages. In cases where you're going to make a fiber optic connection once or twice and you can properly clean it and you're not likely to ever take it apart, you probably won't do much better than a physical contact solution, with the exception of maybe an optical splice and have no connector. But in the other case where you have fiber optics that are mated and demated in the field, you might have the presence of dirt and contamination. In a physical contact solution, that pretty much dictates that at some point you're going to repolish or repair that connector, because in vibration and other environments, a physical contact connector will not survive particularly well if it gets contaminated. And so you can see the pros and cons. Expanded beam will typically give you a little higher insertion loss, some limitations on return loss depending on AR coatings that might be used. But there, you have much less tolerance to vibration impact, misalignment, presence of contamination. And the physics behind physical contact or expanded beam can be applied to discrete contacts, like you see in the center two images, or to MT ribbon-type array connectors where you have multiple fibers in each termi. And there, too, you have the choice between physical contact an expanded beam. So just as definition, as you hear me speak on the next couple of slides, it'll help make it a little more clear. Picking up where Mike left off, kind of as a combination between levels 3 and 4 in the VITA world, I just wanted to expand a bit about some of the trends that have happened in the density and the capability of the VITA modules, where, as they originally started, you could have 2 12-fiber MT ribbon connections, or a single 12 fiber in the VITA 66.1 and .4 implementations, which have now evolved to what is becoming VITA 66.6, where in a half module you can have up to 48 fibers. And so you can see, just on the physical density point of view, how you've quadrupled the capacity of that single position in a VITA type situation. And behind these VITA connectors, you can often look at the transceiver technology, that optoelectronic conversion that's often present on processor cards in the VITA world in particular, and in other systems, where those ribbons are now connected to very small things on the order of the size of a U.S. dime transceivers that are quad QSFP plus miniaturized, ruggedized versions of that type functionality that are connected by those ribbons to the VITA style connectors on the previous slide. Or, as Mike noted earlier, in some cases, to allow for more processing on the system cards, those transceivers have been moved to the card edge, effectively creating a blind mate active interface between a transceiver and the appropriate VITA style connectors, which are evolving in the 66.5 standard that we see in the VITA world today. And there's also a move to take advantage of the ability to mount transceivers mechanically on interposers with very low profile mounting solutions that make them removable and replaceable and avoid the need to run optoelectronic devices through SMT reflow. It is certainly doable in some of the products that TE sells today, but as you move forward in the higher speeds and you look at the flexibilities of these systems, you gain a lot of advantages in the robustness and the ruggedness of a solution and the repairability of a solution by not having a reflow process involved in your assembly. And if you think about speeds, a lot of the physical density changes that you see in the fiber optic world are also being followed along with increases in speeds. Transceivers that are typically today 10 to 12.5 gigabits per transmitter-receive lane and are available as quad transceivers or 12-channel transmit-receive single modules, are rapidly moving to 25 gig speeds and eventually higher. I fully expect we'll see 56 gig at some point in the not too distant future, because this technology in the rugged world is pretty much following the technology evolution in the datacom world, which is clearly at 56 gig and in some cases beyond. And there again, the other density increase that's following is the ability to pack more functionality into a single module. So shortly there will be fiber optic transceivers with a 24 fiber MT ferrule on it, as you see in the middle picture in the top row here, where you have a full 12-channel transceiver at 12 and a half gigabits per channel on a single module. That could be mounted on an edge card, could be mounted in the middle of a system card, just depending on the needs of the system's architecture. And that's often driven by signal integrity requirements on the daughter card itself that dictates how close or far away you can place some of these optoelectronic devices. If you look at just a 3U VPX slot over time, and you look at some of the changes that have evolved and continue to evolve in the digital world, in the optical world, in the RF world, what you see pretty consistently across each of those three technologies is increases in speeds, increases in the number of channels that you can move, be it 32 differential pairs on the electrical side digitally at 10 gig, now into the 48 differential pair range at 25 gig. In the optical world, we already touched on the fact that in a single half position module, we've gone from 10 or 12 rather to 48 fibers in that space, which could enable six quad transceivers and beyond behind that single connector on the card edge. And in the RF world, the size of the contacts continues to shrink, allowing you to get more RF contacts, and they in turn have got a higher bandwidth capability than in the past, so that you can effectively move more and more processing on and off of these cards, both digitally and RF. And it's not uncommon to hear of applications now where you'll have a single half-position module coax connector, a single half-position module fiber connector, a 32 or 48-pair multi-gig connector where there are multiple HD streams being processed on that single card looking for changes frame by frame in real time. And so the computing power that this kind of density and connections allows is opening some really interesting opportunities and levels two and levels three from a packaging point of view. When you step to level five, where you're in the VITA world are often looking at front panel connections and I/O connections and other types of systems, on the copper side, you continue to see increases in speed and modularity, which is driving form factors to shrink in the ARINC world from the large 400 and 600 series connectors into things of the scale of EN4165 now. And in the circular world, you're seeing more and more use of signal-enhanced contact structures like Quadrax and other contact arrangements to allow you to move gigabit Ethernet and higher speeds through a single contact or group of differential pair contacts on a circular interface. And you're also seeing the application of high-speed copper flex circuits to eliminate high-speed traces in some cases on backplanes, where a secondary layer can be impedance controlled for those types of solutions without disturbing the entire structure of the backplane. And in the optics world, the density is pushing copper and fiber together into the same connectors in some of these situations where you need to get signal power and optics off a single connector position. And so you see some hybrid examples from the aerospace world in the upper part of that connection, which have started out historically as discrete copper contacts and discrete fiber contacts, and now are evolving into arrays that allow for discrete copper combined with MT ribbon type fiber interfaces. And if you look at the IO panel to card connections, historically you would see discrete contacts breaking out to traditional fiber connectors based on the transceivers involved, typically LCs if you're looking at an SFP plus type transceiver. today with ribbon-based solutions, you can put 96 fibers into a size 15 circular connector and support 8 12-fiber ribbons in that space, which could translate to 8 12-channel optical devices back somewhere in the system on an I/O board. And so the density and the performance that that allows from a system assembly point of view really allows you to pack a lot more into a much smaller space. And finally, when you look at level 6, much like level 5, you're seeing a continuous increase in the ability to maintain signal integrity and increase speeds on the copper size, both by changing contact structures, moving from quadracs to things like the FAST-T connectors that allow you to put the equivalent of 10 gigabit Ethernet that in the datacom world might look like your RJ connector on your panel, and also be able to push even faster speeds by moving to some of the advanced cable constructions that allow you to have the appropriate losses along the copper transmission paths and increase those distances. And likewise, in the optical world, we're seeing expanded beam and physical contact single assemblies be used more frequently in cases where the distance between these separated systems has increased beyond the point that you can do it effectively or in a power-efficient way over copper. And again, the density of those I/O connectors, much like level 5, are moving from physical contact discrete cables to ribbon fiber-based solutions that could be lensed or physical contact MT-based. And in some cases, to minimize the rework of these separate systems, people are moving to active optical cables in the rugged world, where your transceiver capability or your media converter capability is literally built into your level 6 cable, and the I/O on your system remains copper, as it has been historically. So all of these capabilities are becoming more and more present at the system level to now allow system designers to be able to make appropriate solutions to really take advantage of all of the trends that we've been touching on here as we've walked through the different levels of packaging. And so with that, I'm going to hand it back to Mike to give you a little bit more detail on the evolution of the circular I/O connectors.
Okay, thanks, Mark. So just a quick another example of where the copper high-speed development's been on the I/O side. Traditionally, you can run gigabit Ethernet through a 38999 with a select pinout for the four pairs of pins. With the evolution with higher speed, quadrex contacts are commonly used. So you've got four contacts within shield around them, so you get better isolation, lower crosstalk, those configurations. But there's some new structures that we've been developing. So FAST-T, as mentioned, is a noise-canceling interface. So basically, you've got your pairs in a position where they are oriented as shown, and they would cancel noise and perform at those higher speeds and could support 10 gig Ethernet. Similarly, FAST-X also can support 10 gig Ethernet using a more shielded construction where your pairs are actually isolated by conductive shields between them and could attach to a Cat 6A cable with that shield structure within it. So we're continuing to move forward toward higher speed for copper. And then also from a density standpoint, there's a NanoFast-T, so basically less than half the size of the original Fast-T. So this is perfect for applications that need the high speed, but are tight in space, like helmet type applications, things like that, or radio systems. So just to summarize some of the key takeaways, so we've talked about copper and optical solutions. Copper still is developing in higher speeds and higher density, so there's still a strong need for copper solutions within new systems. Backplane connectors can support 25 gigs and higher. Contact densities have been increasing rapidly, and the higher speed copper cabling, there's some advancements there to isolate and reduce noise. So we're continuing to evolve copper. There are certainly applications where optics makes absolute sense with the levels of bandwidth that optics can support, those longer reaches where only optics can support those long, kilometer runs.
weight and space are key advantages of fiber, obviously. But it also has been time-tested in rugged environments. So we're optics is designed into military avionics, ship-side solutions, many different applications that really challenge the ruggedness of the solution. That's where some of these modules and some of these connector frameworks are critical to providing the support for those module or so for those optical termini. And with transceiver packaging and increases in the density and the number of fibers within transceivers, the increased operating temperatures, the optics realm, similarly to copper, is really evolving into solutions that can provide solutions for harsh environments. So it's really not always a case of copper versus fiber. Internally within our company, we have jokes about whether copper or fiber is going to win out certain solutions. But really, we're developing both technologies, and they both have a place and can coexist in a lot of new systems supporting the application needs that they both can provide. So that's it for our webinar. I would like to turn over to John to review questions, and we can answer those.
Thanks, Mike, Martin, Matt. Great job. And we'll go to our Q&A next. First, there's contact information for the three gentlemen who spoke today. I'll leave that slide up there while we start our Q&A. One sec. Our first question from the audience comes from Mark Benton. Mark, will TE be offering parabyte transceiver at 25 gigabits per second soon?
The short answer to the question is yes. It's in a nearly complete development state, and some controlled sampling with customers is going to start shortly. It'll be a minus 40 to 85 quad transceiver solution to start. I think 12 channel is a bit further out on the timeline, but that'll be the initial offering, and it'll be similar to some of the interposer mounted solutions that you've seen in some of the slides I showed earlier in the presentation.
Thanks, Mark. And don't go anywhere because the next question is for you, too, based on your presentation. Can you touch on the advantages and disadvantages of single mode versus multi-mode?
Sure. My background is a little bit in terms of using fiber optics for solutions as much as it is developing them. And in some past organizations I've been with, we've had a lot of applications for single mode versus multi-mode situations. And I think there's a couple of things you keep in mind fundamentally. Multi-mode is typically perceived to be a little bit easier to terminate and handle, but you have dispersion properties on multi-mode fibers. The faster you go, the shorter distance you get. Single mode, on the other hand, can get you to tens to hundreds of kilometers with the right optical devices. Now, the other advantage that you'll find with single mode is that it often allows you to leverage the ability to optically multiplex multiple signals onto a single fiber. It's done in multi-mode, but nowhere near as much as it's done in single mode. And so there are many applications in the single mode world, broadcast and others, where you might have multiple channels of data on a single fiber, all at slightly different wavelengths. And it really expands the ability, depending on whether you're using CWDM or, in some cases, DWDM lasers. So really, single mode is distance and much more capacity to multiplex. Multi-mode is typically easier to use, and it's typically what we see in embedded systems because the distances just aren't that long.
Thank you, Mark. Our next question is for Mike Walmsley. On your VPX slide, you had space VPX. Are space VPX products deployed yet? If not, how soon do you see it will be till products based on that standard start flying?
Yes, absolutely. Our VPX solutions are designed in for space applications, have been for several years. We did work with the VITA 78 working group on some new configurations that had some redundancy of power for certain applications. And we've met challenges for a number of different customers for space applications. We've got outgassing test results. We've increased the temp rating to 125C specifically for space applications. So it's a very robust solution. It's been in space flight. We're seeing an increasing adoption of it as a standard for new space programs. And being an industry standard as a VPX platform, there's room to expand for new programs.
Well, but as any space standard product, it takes a little longer to get it flying because of all the testing for radiation tolerance.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and one thing I can add to that,
yeah, Mark,
Mike, is that we're seeing similar things on the optics side. So we're heavily involved in satellite programs now where optical flex circuits, the transceivers, all of those devices as well are finding applications on space platforms and need to go through the same types of outgassing, radiation hardening, and the like. But it's certainly a trend we're seeing on the optics side as well.
Thanks, guys. The next question is going to be for Matt. What are the main requirement differences between your commercial and military avionics customers? It's all right.
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say in the commercial world, there's a lot of standardization, but there's a lot of customers that have their own standards. Most of the commercial aviation folks, you know, they try to do things that are standard but proprietary. And so some of the types of products we sell to them kind of fall within a general umbrella, but they're very specific to that customer. The exception would be some of the interconnects we use. So there's a lot of standards in commercial like ARINC or EN 4165, even 38999s. When you get into defense, I would say there's really two things there. Depending on who you work with, they may be more excited about new innovation and be willing to try some of these new cutting-edge products a little bit sooner. Depends on the space. But they still follow standards. I would say VITA, again, as we talked about here, for a lot of the interconnects especially. And the other defense, you will see some of the broad general standards. So the DoD is really getting a little more stringent on the products that get designed in. So if you are not standard and you are not open source and you are not open architecture, the likelihood of you winning a design is getting a little bit more challenging. So those are some of the things that we see different in some of the requirements for them. And one last thing I would say in the military, again, as I touched on earlier, some of the extremes of the requirements, whether it's shock and vibration or temperature extremes, sealing and things like that, chemical compatibility, generally speaking, comm air, you might have to seal against someone spilling coffee or soda on something, but in some of the military, you have more harsh environments.
Thanks, Matt. You make a very good point about open architectures. If you're not involved in that, it's going to be tougher to get the wins. Even the F-35 has moved to full open architecture with their avionics, which we mm-hmm. covered recently. So that's an excellent point. And we're getting close to our end here. I have a question for I'll start with you, Matt. What are some upcoming industry events, avionics, defense, et cetera, or where the audience can see TE Connectivity's products that are being discussed today?
Yeah, so we have two really big events coming up. One is very close. If you're in Europe, Paris Air Show is right around the corner in 2 weeks. And we have a nice booth there. Please stop by. I will not be there, but many of our product managers and local salespeople will be there at Paris Air Show. And that's, I would say, more of a commercial event. The big event that we have in the States for defense is AUSA in October in Washington, D.C. And we have a nice booth there. But I would say if you have interest in these products, all of us are available. We travel all the time to our customers. You can get some really hands-on view of our products, and we can work through your applications for you and help you with how to define them.
Great. Thanks, Matt. And thank you all for your presentation today. You guys did an excellent job, as always. We've been on our webcast before, and we're always look forward to having you back speaking. And that brings us to the end of our time limit for today. So I'd like to thank Matt, Mike, and Mark for speaking, and TE Connectivity for sponsoring the event. Please remember that this and all Open Systems Media webcasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. If we cannot get to all of your questions, someone may get back to you after the webcast with more information. This webcast will be archived online today and be available for 1 year. There will also be an MP3 version of the event available. Thank you all for attending. I look forward to seeing you on future Open Systems Media webcasts. Goodbye.